Hey guys, back in the car today, going to the office. It's a little early actually, it's 7:15. I'm gonna shoot the morning, and then in the afternoon I'm gonna go visit the guys over at Arsenic. Why? Because I think it was Billy that hit me up on Instagram, and we started chatting, and I'd heard from them, I had heard about them from Chris Vongswat out in New York, and I think this was about like 6-7 months ago already, but so here's the thing, is Arsenic does something a little bit differently than Treats, but they also do something also more successfully than Treats, which is they have a larger audience, and I'm not sure if their business model has allowed them to monetize that audience yet, but it intrigues me tremendously, and I think it behooves me to go and have a look and talk to them and see how we can collaborate if there are any ways to. But on the other hand, I think given their profile of how they, the type of imagery that I see from that company specifically, or their company specifically, I do find that there is a little bit of a discrepancy between the types of pictures that I produce and the types of pictures that Arsenic produces, which is to say that they skew a little bit more glamour, and while I definitely am more fashion, because I'm more fashion, the question has to be reconciled whether or not this makes sense for me. But it definitely behooves me to have a look given the tremendous success that they have had with social media marketing. So that took a little bit more explaining than I thought it would, but sometimes it just, it requires more words than I expect. So I turned on the recorder today because I was talking to Tabitha yesterday. She stopped by the office. Yesterday was basically her last day as an intern. And as a result of taking, I think this was a class for her degree out in France. So she's a photography student. She's going to university. And as a requirement for her class, she was supposed to come out here and intern for a photographer. And to bring things full circle, she told me again, you know, the reason I came out here was to see how you work, to find out what you were all about, and then to understand how you created the pictures that you, or create the pictures that you create. And this was kind of the kickoff conversation that we had in the beginning. And I told her that in order to understand the pictures, that of course you have to understand the person. And through multiple shoots and many conversations, I think I showed her kind of who I was, you know, as an artist. I mean, she's seen more shoots than probably any other person in existence. I don't even know, well, outside of maybe Keith. Keith saw a lot of shoots, of course, given that he was with me for a whole year. But of course, Keith wasn't an intern. He was part of the company. So, but outside of Keith, Tabitha definitely saw the most shoots. And through these shoots, I think she really, and conversations, I think she got insight and really an inside track to how I operate. She's supposed to write a report about me for her class, for her, you know, when she goes back, or to hand it in when she goes back. And then I was thinking about this, and I was like, well, you know, this is very intriguing to me because nobody's ever really done that much of an in-depth analysis on me outside of myself, of course. And I was curious at first what she would say. And then I wasn't curious enough to ask her. until yesterday, it was just a very organic conversation. Now, so here's the thing. She's supposed to write a report, and I was originally not going to ask her what she was going to say. So the reason being was because just as I don't really look to others for inspiration, I also don't know. I didn't think that I would gain any value from having that conversation with her and really finding out what she thought of me, because I guess at the end of the day, the truth is, I guess it doesn't matter, right? And it is also why I suggest you guys to, for example, to insulate yourselves and kind of figure things out organically and have these inspirations from within. That being said, yesterday I had, you know, in talking to her, we kind of just got onto the subject, and I wasn't adamant enough, or I wasn't going to ask her not to tell me. I mean, if we're going to talk about it, then I was definitely going to say, hey, well, you know, what did you think about this whole experience? And what was your conclusion on the way that I take pictures or who I am? So, which brings us to the pivoting point or pivot point for this whole conversation. And she said it was very curious to her that the way that I felt about my pictures, and which was a whole series of podcasts called Art and Process, during which I basically said I didn't have, I'm not really saying anything with my pictures. That's what I said in those podcasts. And she thought it was very curious, and she told me that because with her, you know, everything that she does, she's trying to say something. And also, most of the artists, most of the photographers that are in her class, it's like they try to teach them, don't do anything unless you're making a statement, which is totally counterintuitive to, or not counterintuitive, but rather counter to what I was saying, which is basically, In the absence of making statements, you must take action anyway. You should still shoot. And then to stretch that out a little bit more, I was basically saying that I didn't think my picture said anything at all. So part of this conversation was that she made this funny conclusion or realization that she said, you know, for someone who talks so much about philosophy, it's interesting that you have no philosophy in your images. And that was something that I had to think about for a second, because nobody had ever really said that. And if you sit down and think about what she's saying, it's totally true. It's, you know, the way that I think and the way that I talk with you guys on podcasts, I'm constantly talking about and thinking about how I create pictures, and yet there's no message in the pictures themselves. You know, there's no like social commentary, you know, out specifically in my imagery, maybe not so much, or maybe there is more so in my videos. But anyway, so I thought about it for a second, and I responded to her basically like, you know, I think I shoot the way that a robot would if a robot could shoot pictures or could take pictures. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the topics of the podcast that I create, most of these topics are much more philosophical in how you create the images, but not necessarily like what is specifically inspiring to me, right? I don't get into the details of, oh, I saw this piece of art yesterday that was about women's revolution, and it was about standing up for yourself, and I really wanted to portray that in a shoot. Like, you'll never hear me say that. I keep my inspirations pretty close to the chest, if there are any that are of that nature. But most of the time, to be honest with you, I don't have any like that. Like, I don't think like that. That's not how I get inspired. And as I've been totally honest with you guys, I don't think my pictures, they don't say anything revolutionary from a social or from a commentary or from a philosophical point of view. They just don't. I think they're pretty pictures. That doesn't mean there's not philosophy behind the images in how they're created and how I think that you ought to, you know, you ought to be or you ought to do in order to get images like that. There's tons of what I would say technical philosophy. But as far as like message and spiritual or social or any sort of like embodiment of a greater ideal, no, that's not what my pictures do, and that's not what I want them to do. Not, and I don't think they can really do that either. But again, maybe I'm putting them down because that's just not my cup of tea for pictures. Now for videos, that's something different, which is why I say it's really limited to the imagery that I create. Now, I lost my train of thought for a second. I was going to say, I'm talking about how I don't create pictures that way, the way that someone, a true artist, right? That someone who is inspired by some greater movement, you know, I don't create pictures like that. The way that I create pictures, or what I think my pictures might say, if anything, is really that I am capturing and embodying some beauty, some ideal that is mostly visual and aesthetic. So I think, if anything, and I don't know if this is worth its weight in salt or it says anything at all, but if I could say anything about my pictures, is it's that there is some unique aesthetic to the images that is driven by the way that I see things, the way that I idealize women's beauty. Now, that specific aesthetic doesn't change the world. It doesn't argue for women's rights. It doesn't argue for plus size, you know, beauty or anything like that. It's not, I mean, in a critical sense of that perspective, it isn't earth shattering, right? The type of beauty that my images embody is really rather mundane from the male perspective. That is, I'm trying to capture some beauty that is fairly commercially accepted. Definitely skewing more towards the fashion world, right? But, you know, generally well accepted. Like, the girls have long hair. Nobody's short-haired or bald or, you know, alternative looking with tattoos, with, you know, piercings and any of that. It's a fairly straightforward vision of what I think a woman should look like. You know, nudity doesn't even play into that statement at all. Well, it does, I guess, because most of the pictures I take have some sort of nudity in it. But the integral part of what I'm doing doesn't have anything to do with nudity, because of it's the vision of the girl, really with exception or with no consideration for what the clothes are or aren't. I guess what I'm saying is I don't think that my pictures have to have nudity in them to reflect my ideals. My ideals can still be reflected, and my sense of aesthetic, or my aesthetic as far as imagery is concerned, can still be created without naked girls, or without the girls wearing anything. But coming back to that statement, it's simply that, again, it's not a philosophy that is driven by some sort of, you know, creating a greater good for mankind. Like, I don't see fashion at like that at all, you know, except for the rare instances of when people use like sustainable fabrics or sustainable materials, or when they use plus size models, or when they use black models, or when their fashion is specifically driven by something that they wish to change about the world. My pictures don't have anything to do with that, and they don't say anything like that. But that also doesn't mean they don't say anything at all. I think that, for example, like what I've argued for on this podcast is, don't force anything down my throat, right? Like, if you want to use plus size models in your magazines or in your fashion, that's fine, right? That's your argument for what you think is aesthetically pleasing. But at the same time, I don't believe that you need to cram that down my throat. So one of the things I think I've said is historically the pendulum swings from left to right as far as like how big they think, or society rather, how big people think models should be or how big they think women should be. And we've gone all the way from the full figured girls of the 60s to kind of that, the maybe perhaps overly skinny anorexic kind of look, I would say maybe like, I don't know, 90s. And then now we've kind of swung back. There's a lot of backlash to accepting or acceptance of bigger girls, you know, which is fine. I don't have any problem with that. It's just not my cup of tea. And so in my imagery, I don't, you know, reflect any of that. But at the same time, I don't think just because you think that's that it's the flavor of the month or flavor of the year or whatever, that I have to accept it. So I personally am not going to accept it, and I don't know. I mean, fuck, I don't remember my point. Still early in the morning for me as far as trying to get to the studio and shoot kind of, and my mind's a little bit blurry sometimes early on. It doesn't really straighten out until about mid afternoon. So this is actually quite unusual for me, which is probably why I sound different. I can hear it in my voice. I can hear it in my inflection and in my energy level as well. But anyway, getting back to the topic, I'm thinking about this statement, of course. Like, I don't have any political statements in my images. It's, you know, as far as the aesthetic thing, it's like, you can't argue it one way or the other, right? This, which is why I think that when society argues that they think something else is beautiful other than what I think is beautiful, I don't have any problem with what they think. It's just I don't believe it. I'm not going to be able to adopt that. So it's not going to show up in my pictures. We're going to be largely exclusive. But what I think about my pictures is that they stand the test of time generally. Like, when I look at the wall of pictures that I have in the studio, I don't ever think that, oh, you know, this is so dated, you know what, this is like, this doesn't apply anymore. These pictures could have been taken back 20 years ago. You know, I mean, the hairstyles that I like probably aren't ever going to change because they're not really with the trend. They're kind of just more of a natural look. I don't do any really exotic or what's the right word? Extravagant hairdos. You also won't see me do any extravagant makeup anymore. So there is something timeless about and classical about the way that I create pictures that is outside of whatever the trends are right now, which is, I mean, part of it is that I don't know what the trends are. And then the other part of it is I don't like trends, period. My aesthetic of that, of beauty, you know, in the female form exists outside of time of, you know, the era that I live in. Now, of course, that's not possible because everything that we do is affected by everything around us. But I'm basically saying that I think that I could have taken similar pictures, you know, either in the future or in the past. I don't think that you'll find my taste in these types of pictures to change too much over time. there is a reluctance and resistance to adapt to the trends and whatever else is going on at the time, the fad. I generally just don't like fads. Anyhow, so yeah, the conversation was interesting because she said, your philosophy for taking pictures is that you don't have a philosophy, or you don't have any philosophy. And I think there's many ways to take that or to interpret that. If I were to step back a little bit more from that conversation, I think you could infer that the type of person that I am is someone who repeatedly looks at the types of processes and theories and philosophies and then repeatedly rebukes them, or not rebukes them, but refutes them rather. Because I will examine everything and then I'll flip everything on its head if I can. And so as far as, and I don't think this is what Tabitha meant by that, I don't have a philosophy or any philosophy, you know, to my imagery. But as a person, I think that there is something very Western and scientific about what I am. And to the extent that I'm not sure why I don't believe in anything. That's, I think, the final conclusion of that statement is that I'm a man of little faith, because there isn't anything. As far as photography is concerned, I live in a godless world. And I live in a godless world in general in my personal life, but with photography even more so, I suppose. And the reason that is because I don't know that there's any process or there's any way of doing things or there's any person taking pictures out there that you couldn't find fault with, or that you couldn't, you know, there's no perfection, right? There's always something that you can improve upon, and there's a lot of myths and false gods, or, you know, things that people think that really just aren't true. So for me, it's more of a figuring these things out for myself and experimenting and then creating my own set of beliefs, which, you know, to say that I don't have my own set of beliefs is also not true, but my beliefs are also very, very soft too, meaning that I reserve the right to also turn those things on top of their heads. So there isn't anything in my belief system that is all that permanent, which is why for me it's very much like it's a godlessness, that there's no, like, there's something that wins today that I might worship or I might think is the best thing since sliced bread. But the minute I find or figure out what's wrong with it is basically the minute that I find, or that I am disillusioned and disappointed and angry at myself for ever believing in anything at all whatsoever. So in that sense, philosophically, I have no philosophy, and that is a very true statement. And yes, that does transcend photography itself. And like I said earlier, it's kind of the way that I am in my personal life. I don't have too many idols, if any at all. And I don't have any true beliefs, because I reserve the right. I'm the opposite of dogmatic. I am infinitely morphing from one thing to another without ever being anything at all, ever. Ooh, that's deep. I know that sounds like I'm praising myself, but in many ways I'm rather criticizing myself, because it simply means, or the way that I hear it is, I don't really stand for anything at all, which is very true. Actually, I don't have like dogmatic beliefs in politics, religion, anything. My belief system is that you have to be constantly able to say you know what, I was wrong. You know what, this doesn't work. You know what, there's a better way. So in order to retain that flexibility, I guess it also makes it difficult to believe anything is set in stone. And so I guess the sad part of how I live in, you know, with that belief system is that I am quick to switch gears, and that it's hard to pin me down on any specifics. I mean, when you listen to me on podcasts, so that's not how I come across. I have plenty of strong opinions, but I guess I'm not saying that I don't have opinions. I have opinions all day, right? I have opinions out the wazoo. It's specifically to say that my opinions are not rooted in dogma, and my opinions aren't, I don't believe in my opinions enough to say that this is irrefutable for forever, that I am, you know, that whatever it is that I say will stand the test of time. No, I think I can only make the opposite claim, which is, you know, I always tell you guys, whatever I say here, test it. Take it with a grain of salt and try it for yourself and see if I'm right or not. Now, most of the time I would like to believe that whatever it is I'm trying to suggest is probably going to hold water until you test it. Will it stand the test of time for forever? I don't know. I would never claim to believe or claim that to be true. You know, so I mean, and most of the things that I suggest that you guys try are more technical in nature anyway, right? They're not tests about whether or not there's a God. Because I couldn't, of course, I don't, you know, there's no way to test that. I have nothing to say about that. Not on this podcast, at least, or not right now. But if I ask you to go test light, you know, go test, you know, model behavior, go test some technique in Photoshop, I mean, those are all, you know, scientifically, and they have nothing to do with belief systems, right? So that's not philosophical at all. Those are just techniques. But yeah, I'm quick to switch gears as far as personal opinions, because you never know, man. You never know, because I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly adapting to my own environment, and even as reluctant as I am or resilient as I am to change. But, and because of that, so I mean, I always reserve the right to be wrong. But, you know, I mean, I love being right. Don't get me wrong. I think I enjoy being right, but I also, also realize that the things that I believe in, like, for example, we believe that we are special. We are, you know, some unique property that exists only on this planet, and we're the smartest species on this planet. So we think that we're special. And then in the absence of being able to prove that there's other life out there, we think that, you know what, Earth is this perfect, like, distance from the sun to the planet in order to have created life, and that maybe this is a really, really special place that doesn't exist in the rest of the universe. A lot of people actually believe that, when maybe what is more likely is that once you get a set of properties like water and atmosphere and whatnot, that maybe life assembles itself. And I find that much more probable, you know, and easier to believe than the alternative, which is, you know, in the whole universe, we are unique. There is no other life. I would be hard pressed to think that at all. Anyway, sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm not apologizing. I'm just saying that I'm here at the office now. I've got to run. I do apologize if some of that was rambling, and I don't know if any of that lends any insight to anything at all. It's something that I tried to talk through, because it was a conversation that I had with Tabitha just yesterday. So still very fresh in my mind, still very much a mystery, and I'm still trying to figure everything out myself. All right, so let's see if I can get a parking spot here. So I'll talk to you guys all soon. I hope to have something interesting to say when I come back from either the shoot or talking with Billy over at Arsenic. All right, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you guys all soon. Peace.